On today's Josh Nason's Punch Out, which just happens to be the 200th episode, we're going to celebrate April. That's right. We're going to continue the look back at pro wrestling's year that was in 2022 with not a 1 hour, but a 2 hour extravaganza examining April 2022. Andrew Thompson of Post Wrestling joins me, and we went deep into a month that had WrestleMania 38, which saw the in-ring return of Stone Cold Steve Austin, and also, I guess you could say, the in-ring return of Vince McMahon. That probably shouldn't have happened, with AEW's Tony Khan accusing WWE of bots. That's right, an army of bots, something we still have not heard anything about. And all kinds of other stuff happened throughout the month as well. Again, we went deep on this, 2 hours long. So enjoy the 200th episode of Josh Nason's Punch Out, taking a look back at April 2022. Enjoy. Well, I'll tell you what, we just came back from Full Gear, so we're recording this just a week or so, just over a week since Newark, New Jersey happened. And I tell you, there was three, outside the talent involved, the three most popular people that weekend. Busted Open's Dave LaGreca, because I saw him taking pictures with everyone, including right in front of us and during Full Gear itself. MJF's mother, who was taking pictures with everybody in the stands during Full Gear. And my guest at this time, Post Wrestling's Andrew Thompson, who's returning back for the Year in Review series. And he was, of course, part of the Post Wrestling 5th Anniversary Extravaganza, which I was also there as well, kind of observing for the back. And I got to meet Andrew for the first time. And yeah, very, very popular guy. Andrew, I'm glad I was able to fit you into your busy schedule. Welcome back.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back on the podcast. The last time we did this, I had a really... really great time, and I also enjoyed some of the feedback that we got on social media from that as well. So definitely looking forward to this go around. I don't know if I'm as popular as Josh is making me out to be, but it was definitely good to be at the post 5th anniversary show, man, and seeing everybody, and of course seeing you too, Josh. That was just a good overall vibe right there that whole weekend, and of course capping it off, you know, getting the, you know, kicking with everybody at Full Gear, you know, the post show and all that type of stuff. So yeah, that but probably one of my favorite weekends of 2022 for sure.
Yeah, that was I know you and the post crew went out on Friday, and yep. I know that was, and that was your first time meeting John and Way as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first time running into John and Way, because we were all gonna meet up at Times Square, and then we just agreed that like I would just go with them out there, and we would meet up with everybody, and we were all in that same hotel.
That's right.
The one in Newark. So when I went down there, and I saw John and Way, it was like, you know, because we had seen each other over you know, social media, and you know, of course, like doing the different post shows and stuff like that on, you know, through Zoom and all that. So it wasn't like the "Oh my god, oh, it's really you" type thing. It was like, you know, it was just cool. Like, "Hey, what's up, man?" You mm-hmm. know, it was just, we just carried on how we usually would, you know, through social media and stuff, or through, you know, messages and all that good stuff. So yeah, it was definitely good to see John and Whit, man. That was a real cool thing to, you know, be able to finally see, you know, everybody that you know through social media and, you know, through all these different platforms and social sites. In person, and for the sort of the natural conversations to just be as you would think it would, because y'all see each other so often, but just on a different medium.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I had the same experience meeting you for the first time. John Way I'd met before, but other people just even at the show, like Denise Salcedo and John Alba, mm-hmm. who I'd never met. A lot of people. There was people I'm forgetting. But yeah, there was people you just get to meet, you put faces to names and social media handles to names and all that stuff. So yeah, it was good. It was a good, you know, kind of my day job is also a work from home job. So it's nice to be like out and seeing people, you know what I mean? So yeah, that was a lot of fun. I'm hoping next time they come to the East Coast for a pay-per-view, it's not Newark. I will go for a different city with a little bit more things to do. But yeah, it was really fun seeing people, man, yourself included. So Yeah, so let's get to it. So I know we so last year, again, people have kind of listened to the series already know this, but what we do is I go through all the different headlines for the course of a month. I pick through some of the most interesting stuff, and there's a lot here because this month is April. This is WrestleMania month, and I know I sent you this list, and we were just talking about before we started recording about how many things are on here, but there was a lot. So I went through 519 different headlines for this month. Yeesh. So there's a lot happening. And we'll start with WWE, of course, because it's their month with WrestleMania 38 happening. Two nights, of course, and I'll go through this, all the different happenings and results and things like that, and then we'll kick it over to you for your thoughts as we as we talk here, obviously many months later after this happened. But Mania 38, we had Rick Boogs, who suffered an injury in the WrestleMania opening match, tough for him, required surgery for that, and he is still not back from this as we record in very late November. The Miz turned on Logan Paul during their tag team match. Bianca Belair won the Raw Women's title, and that was a really cool moment for her and something I think a lot of people assumed was coming, but it was a nice coronation for her to really elevate her status. Gable Stevenson made his in-ring debut, you could say, but his first kind of appearance as part of the WWE roster, confronted Chad Gable at the show as well. We're still waiting to see what is going to go on with Gable Stevenson in the ring of the future. Cody Rhodes, of course, officially signed to WWE, made his return. The ultimate vindication, as he called it later on, defeating Seth Rollins in a very entertaining match. Crowd was into that, no doubt about it. Came out to his same music and all that as well. That was a really fun moment. Another fun moment, Steve Austin returning. This was the KO show. And then it turned into a no-holds-barred match between Steve Austin and Kevin Owens. A pretty cool moment for anyone that had again been around during the Attitude Era. And this was just a fun brawl. Went all over the place. Steve Austin picking up the win there. Drew McIntyre, we learned he had a special entrance set up for Mania 38, but that was scrapped. Ronda Rousey, there was a little bit of a controversy there because the Austin-Owens thing was essentially the main event of night one, and Rousey versus Charlotte Flair was kind of like the co-main event, and there was a little thing about whether she was upset about that. She said she was disappointed, but then they said it was an absolute honor to perform under Steve Austin at WrestleMania 38. And Rousey losing to Charlotte Flair. In that match, Triple H made his first appearance since his medical issues in terms of in the arena, left his boots in the ring, indicating, again, he was definitely done and retired. Good moment for him. Johnny Knoxville defeated Sami Zayn, and Jackass stars appeared. This was quite a spectacle match, and Sami Zayn later saying it was one of his all-time favorites. Sasha Banks and Naomi, remember them. They won the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship rather in a four-way. Damian Priest aligned with Edge, a little bit of a swerve there during that match as well. Vince McMahon returned to the ring. This was during the aftermath of the Pat McAfee Austin Theory match, and Vince did not need to do this at all. That brought out Steve Austin. Steve Austin appeared again. Of course, you got to have the Austin McMahon confrontation. And McMahon took such a bad bump on a stunner. I believe it's edited out from the Peacock version of the show, if I remember right. I think they completely took that section or that bump out. And then Roman Reigns defeating Brock Lesnar in a title unification match to headline the whole weekend. Kind of something I didn't think was going to ever happen was them unifying the two titles, but they went through with it and have stuck with it. And also producer Pac Buck quit WWE following WrestleMania, and he would eventually sign with AEW. So a lot happened at WrestleMania, many months ago, but what are your thoughts on what happened, Andrew?
Man, it's kind of crazy to think back like how much time has flown since then and how much, like even like some of the sub stories that you mentioned, and like even throughout the entire list that you compiled of like just the different headlines from the month of April, like even how some of those stories, those some like mini stories have like altered since then because of the people involved in those stories, like where they are present day. Like it's kind of crazy to see like how things have like shifted and moved, all the way since April. But WrestleMania, I was there for night one. That was my first WrestleMania that I went to, and it was a cool first experience. I sort of made up my mind, which night I was going to attend. Like I was kind of, of course, very, very heavily leaning towards see Steve Austin, but like once they formally announced that Seth Rollins was going to be wrestling this mystery opponent, I was like, that's the night. There we go. Because I get to see, you know, you'll get the Bianca match. You know, you get the Steve match. You get, of course, who everybody was speculating and would eventually reveal to be Cody Rhodes. But yeah, night one of WrestleMania, like, just thinking back on it, I think that if I had to say, like, my favorite match of the night, which I think was the best overall, I would say, I would say Bianca versus Becky. I think they showed out, like, and I don't know how, I didn't, like, watch it back on the Peacock broadcast, but man, like, when it came time for that final stretch of the match, for Bianca versus Becky, and like she picked her up off the turnbuckle for the KOD, man, it was crazy in that stadium. Like, people they wanted Bianca, and this, you know, it's real cool to see, like, where she is right now is, like, essentially one of the faces of WWE. Like, I would honestly say, like, under Roman Reigns, like, she's like that person, like, right now in the company. And yeah, for Cody Rhodes, like, I think that's it. I'm pretty sure me and you gonna talk about it, because it's like a whole spinoff of him showing up in WWE. But like, him leaving his position in AEW, leaving a company that he founded, you know, along with Kenny Omega, you know, Matt and Nick Jackson and Tony Khan, that's a big fucking deal, man. Like, him leaving somewhere that he, you know, a company, another alternative that he helped start. And I think it also opens up the, it sort of removes that question mark from a plethora of other talents as well. Like, do you think anybody else could leave AEW? But I mean, with a dude who helped start the company, if he's willing to depart, I think that sort of opens that sort of door for anybody who could, you know, possibly make that jump, or, you know, vice versa as well. So, but I think Cody, for him to have to, I think there's enough pressure with a wrestler coming into what, whether it be in any company, like, to have it come in like a big debut spot like that, and to already want everything to go perfectly in terms of your debut. And then on top of that, you got to go wrestle a full length match now. And that has to, that doesn't have to go well, but you want it to go well. And it did go well. So like that's another big thing as well. And for Steve Austin, on the Steve Austin front, I feel like the promotion of that match was probably the smartest thing, from whether it was WWE's decision or Steve Austin's decision to go about it that way, because it was kind of like a, let's not overhype this thing. Let's underhype it and overdeliver. Because like, by them not coming out the gate and being like, hey, Steve Austin, he's going to be wrestling Kevin Owens, because I remember they were kind of teasing it as a confrontation. I think that was what it was billed as originally. But before, like, Steve Austin came out and they had formally announced the match, it was billed as a confrontation between Steve Austin and Kevin Owens. He was going to confront him. And I think that was very, very smart on their part, because it takes a lot of pressure off of Steve Austin. And it already sets in people's minds the fact that they were already building this as I mentioned, the confrontation. It's sort of, it's already sets the viewer's mind in, like, okay, maybe we're not going to get a match. So it's not like outright people were expecting this. And then when they got it, it's just like, you know, it actually turned out way better than I expected. So I think that was a smart play on, you know, both sides to sort of take a lot of pressure off of Steve Austin for his, you know, for his first match back. And then, Josh, it's actually funny we say that, because, you know, it was a report out from, I believe, from Fightful that, you know, I think WWE made an approach towards Steve Austin for next year's WrestleMania in LA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a lot of potential options people talking about for that one. So I think that's a real interesting thing, man, that Steve Austin could, you know, he might be going back to back at WrestleMania. It's
unbelievable
coming up soon.
Unbelievable. Let's go through, very well put with all that. I think, let's go through this next section, because there's a lot of stuff to get through here. Obviously, the follow-up for Mania is sometimes as interesting as the lead-up and stuff that happens. You talked about Cody Rhodes. He did a bunch of different interviews, especially right after the show, in the following days. After that, saying, I don't think I want a management job in wrestling ever again. He was announced he was going to be appearing on the Broken Skull Sessions with Steve Austin. He admitted that he added to the tribalism between AEW and WWE fans. That was something we'd heard, you kind of heard in the small leaks and stuff like that. We still, to this point, don't know what really happened, but basically kind of the tea leaves and the stuff that's come out is that he he essentially had lost a lot of, you know, kind of booking power and office power, and despite still being an EVP, and had just, you know, he said, if he texted this to Davey, whatever he had said, you know, it was basically time to leave the territory. And at that, his, you know, his run had just kind of ended, that he just wasn't, you know, just really wasn't that thrilled what was happening. You know, I think we talked about this in the March episode, when all this stuff, you know, first started coming out, that there was, you know, there's a lot of different factors that kind of led into that. But he, you know, he talked about some things, and, you know, both he and Khan have been, you know, complimentary of each other to the extent that they can be. You know, they don't really go much into detail about it. But, yeah, you know, what you were saying earlier is a really astute point, is it showed other potential free agents that could move to WWE. And then again, this is during the Vince era, right? When all this happened, is that people could come over and that they could be featured as well. And that it was not a case of them having to go to NXT and work their way back up. And I'm sure there may be some cases of that, but let's throw a name out there, like a Hangman Page. He becomes a free agent. He's just like, at that point, he's like, you know, I want to go north, so to speak. He's not going to be brought in to have a lesser role, like an opening card role or an NXT or something like that. I think that, you know, Cody Rhodes, obviously, has a little bit bigger name, but when it comes to online fans and what they understand, they don't bring in a lot of free agents now, but I think the ones they do are going to make more of an impact. When I say free agents, people that have been with the other company, right? And I think Cody Rhodes and how they treated him, the respect they treated him with, and obviously, you know, he got injured, but I think it's a good sign for them, and it's a good sign for, and again, this is during the Vince era, I think it's a good indication, a bridge towards other potential free agents that might want to come over, that they're not going to be buried. Like, this isn't a WCW situation. They're going to be treated with respect and given the opportunity to do something. I think that's a good thing for wrestlers for both sides. They can make more money and be featured and hopefully have better lives.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a positive. I remember when when, you know, even before Cody like officially showed up, and like, you know, when people would just like speculating about, you know, him eventually crossing over or coming over. Like, I think that was like one of the main talking points, like in many conversations, was like how he was going to be treated, especially like you said, like you pointed out, under that Vince McMahon regime. And honestly, I think it's like even more, not even more intriguing, but like on the same level of intrigue as the, like, how Triple H is going to present Cody Rhodes, you know, with the whole smashing the throne thing. And like, of course, Cody admitting that he's added to the tribalism, you know, he's had his comments about Triple H in the past, and, you know, those sort of, he addressed those in like that post-Mania scrum or press conference that he did. And, you know, it was like Triple H is one of his favorite wrestlers and all this, all that type of stuff. But like, it's going to be interesting to see how he's presented under this new regime, and how he sort of slotted it and brought back in and stuff like that. But yeah, to your point about the, you know, how this sort of, you know, it sort of takes away or not fully for everybody, but it shows that, hey, you can come over from the rival opposition and, you know, we'll treat you like a big deal. And Cody got it, you know, got the big pyro, the big WrestleMania entrance. You know, he was featured heavily, man. He was on TV every week in prime spots, and, you know, he was doing a real good job, like all the way till the unfortunate injury. And like, I can see, when I'm looking over at AEW right now, I can see like a couple names who I think would cross over to WWE, and I think they would do well. Like, one of those names I could see going to, I don't know like when this will happen, but I can see like a Thunder Rosa going over to WWE. I can see Warlow going to WWE. I can see like an Anna Jay going over to WWE. Like, I can see, I don't know necessarily about names like a Ricky Starks or somebody along those lines, because like, I don't know, I feel like they kind of, they're in a real nice spot with AEW, referring to people like Ricky, but you just never know. But yeah, I think that it's cool that, you know, we have like these two rival wrestling companies, you know, and then you can have wrestlers sort of having that free range, man, to go back and forth. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of interesting to see, like, we'll see how things turn out over the next several years or so about which wrestlers land where. But I definitely think Cody is a great example of, you know, a great first example of a wrestler can, you know, come from one company to the another, because to the next, and you know, thrive under those.
All right, let's go over some of the other headlines here for the month. So they announced that WrestleMania 39 would be held over two nights. TJ Wilson returned back to work as a WWE producer after taking a little bit of time off to work on his some rehab for his neck. Love was in the air. Charlotte Flair and Andrade El Idolo announced they were going to get married this summer. Carmel and Corey Graves got married. Alexa Bliss and singer Ryan Cabrera got married. Bliss later saying she was just waiting on the call to return WWE TV because she had been off for quite some time. Triple H returned, again, spoke to a WWE talent meeting and offered some advice to the roster. So him kind of getting back ingratiated with the group, that was a big story in March and April. Obviously more to come on that. And months after, AJ Styles said he picked up the option to extend his WWE contract. Elias returned to TV on Raw and claimed he was not Elias, but his younger brother Ezekiel. So that started in April. Classic Vince. MVP turned on Bobby Lashley on Raw and aligned with Omos instead. Jerry Lawler filled in on Raw commentary for a couple weeks. Logan Paul's deal was learned to include a babyface turn at some point. So that was kind of interesting how that was worded. Duquesne football player Roman Mesick accepted a contract offer. Nash Carter was released following domestic abuse allegations and some other stuff there. Shane McMahon's son Declan committed to the Indiana University football program and later said, you know, with wrestling in the future, he said, never say never, or you never know. So who knows about if Declan McMahon will be in WWE at some point. That'd be interesting. Lacey Evans reportedly was set to return to WWE TV after giving birth. There's more front office changes. WWE named a new general counsel and corporate secretary. So again, I bring these up because you kind of see the Nick Khan influence continue to grow within the company. Gunther, Marcel Barthel, Raquel Gonzalez all debuted on SmackDown. Curtis Axel and Arya Davari reportedly got some producer tryouts. WWE began teasing a tag team title unification of the Raw and SmackDown titles. And then they initially had a unification match on the books for Backlash, and then it was made to a six-man tag instead. So at that point, really weren't sure kind of what was going on. Backlash, again, was beginning to take shape. Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins was announced. Edge versus AJ Styles. Again, the aforementioned initial tag team unification match was just changed to a trios match. Roman Reigns was obviously going to be added to the card. Tommaso Ciampa got his call up and then got his first name dropped. Again, classic Vince. Rhea Ripley had to miss some Raws due to being in quote-unquote protocol. WWE dropped Austin Theory's first name. They hate first names. Now is just known at that point as Theory. They announced the September UK Stadium event in Wales that would become known as Clash at the Castle. Obviously, a pretty successful show there. Young Rock teased the Rock versus Roman Reigns match at WrestleMania, which everyone seems to think might happen, but aren't quite sure. So we'll kind of see how that goes.
You think it's happening? It's hard to call right now, is it?
Yeah, I'm not feeling it. I don't know why. Hey, Rock has got a busy schedule. Does he want to do that? Obviously, LA is going to be the place to do it. But if I had to bet right now, I'd say no. And I think it's going to be Reigns and Cody at Mania. That's my thought. WWE Meno gave the reason for the recent wrestler name changes, and that being Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And then Theory won the United States Championship on WWE Raw. There's a few other ones here, but I want to give you a shot. Any thoughts on any of that stuff I just mentioned?
Yeah, man. So it was a lot of interesting talking points in that one. Like, sort of the first one was the one about, you know, Triple H speaking at the talent meeting, and like one of the highlights from that, like within that like sub note, you know, was Nick Khan was talking about like talents who receive like additional compensation from like WWE's partnerships, like with third parties. Yes. And like that was like stemming from like that that third party edict that was like set in, what was that, fall 2020 that set in place when the talents couldn't like do Twitch and you know that type of stuff. Like I remember Paige, Saraya got real emotional, I think, on one of her Twitch streams one time, you know, when she was talking about like the edict that got put in place. And like, that's how, you know, that's sort of the only thing she had, right? You know, that was of hers, like, you know, and she was like very, very vocal about that. I know it was even thing like when Zelina Vega had exited WWE, you know, she was eventually brought back and stuff like that. But it was sort of interesting because I recently, Sheamus, he had did an interview. And he was like, it was for promoting Survivor Series War Games, and he revealed that his Celtic Warrior Workouts YouTube channel, the reason it went on hiatus was because of that third party edict. And Vince McMahon, he said that the interview was with Shaq Wrestling, by the way, Shaquille Mujuri, He the one that conducted the interview with Sheamus. And he said that like he Vince like wanted him to shut the channel down completely. Like I'm talking about like deleted like type of thing. And Sheamus was like, this dude was like 700,000 subscribers into this thing. And like they wanted the entire thing gone. And he said that he told Vince that it was completely taken down, but he never took it down. And because he felt like it was going to be an opportunity where he could bring it back. And he had he actually said this like really like this all like really lines up because he said that it was at WrestleMania that he talked to Triple H and Stephanie McMahon about the channel coming back, and they were game for it. They were like, you know, we can, you know, we can work something out, we can do this, we can get it going. And he said that started the process of, you know, the Celtic Warrior workouts being brought back into where, you know, he's at now. Like, it's, you know, the channel's fully back. I think there's like a couple episodes in deep, but like that's like the most, like looking back at that third party edict, bro, it's like the most nonsensical thing that you could like strip away from a personality or wrestler whatever, like to take away this other outlet that they use to bring in income or and grow their respective brands. It just seems like pointless, like mm-hmm. to want to control that or like take them away from that. Like I like even in hindsight, like it sounds more crazier than it did like when that was all initially happening.
Yeah, let's go over the other chunk here to finish off the month. Let's see. Steve Austin said he was feeling 100% physically after the WrestleMania 38 return. Pat McAfee was revealed to be in talks with Amazon for a Thursday Night Football role. WWE's Miz, Titus O'Neil, and were part of four wrestlers that announced picks at the NFL draft. Bret Hart was believed to have quietly signed a lucrative WWE deal that turned out to be just a merchandising deal. Instead, Tyson Fury teased a potential Drew McIntyre match at Clash in the Castle. WWE was reportedly playing Asuka's return. Mustafa Ali returned to WWE TV on Raw and faced The Miz. Again, he was off for quite some time, essentially wanted to get released. That did not happen. Bret came back and really nothing changed for him. Ariana Grace was set to make her in-ring debut on Level Up. Jimmy Uso called police officer an asshole during his July 2021 DUI arrest. Really good there. WWE part with DAZN to promote a Kay Taylor Amanda Serrano boxing match. The company said they were intending to run more stadium shows going forward. Their social media celebrated the 20th anniversary of Randy Orton's debut. And then John Cena said that Austin Theory has, quote unquote, far more talent, strength, and gifts than he ever had. Yeah, that he ever. Yeah. Yeah, that's what he said. Of course, if some people were thinking that was building towards an eventual match between those two, again, this is when Vince was really getting behind Theory and all that good stuff.
I thought to say, I mean, I do think, and like in all honesty, I do think he's a better wrestler than John Cena at this stage. He's a better wrestler than Cena. But like I'm talking in terms of like, see like where Cena is star power wise and stuff like that and all that, like that's not even a question. But like, hey Josh, do you mind if I go back to one of the like within this bunch, like one of the points that you brought up? One
yes
of the
go for
points
it.
That you brought up,
absolutely.
So like when Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser, that's a stupid ass name, but Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser got called up. Do you remember when they were doing the thing where he was basically like punking him out, like when he was like just beating on Marcel, like whatever he felt like it, like even if he would win a match, he'd still be down on him. I never liked that presentation of them as a duo, and especially with the fact that, you know, Fabian Knight or Giovanni Vinci, he got split away from them. Like I always thought that they were always like that was a trio. Like that, it was them. It was always them. And of course, who was Axel Tischer was with them as well. Alexander Wolf was with them. But like, just within like what we got right now, I always felt like they were a great trio and they always belonged together. But like, I remember there was like a rumor that Vince McMahon was like starting to lose interest in Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser. And I know Ludwig, he got asked about it. I want to say. This had to be like 2 months ago or 3 months ago. He did this interview with this outlet called WAZ, and he got at the interviewer had asked him, was like, have you heard about this rumor that like Vince McMahon is like losing interest interest in Ewing. Vince McMahon had lost interest in Ewing Gunther, but by this time Vince was already out because he had resigned because of the allegations and stuff like that. And I had wrote down the quote, took down the quote that that Marcel had said, and he was like, I don't know anything about the rumors. He said, you know, the rumors that Vince McMahon was losing interest and stuff like that. He said it's also usually the case that we don't let it get to us like that. From our side, we have been totally satisfied since we started on SmackDown. We've had a great reception there. The feedback has been positive right from the start. We can't complain about our TV time either. When you look at what we've done in a few months, even with Gunther's in the kind of the championship title, it speaks for itself. Of course, there are always rumors here and there, but a lot of it is just not true. And like, I mean, I think a lot of times with stuff, I don't know if there's any like credence to that rumor, like about like specifically like whether he was getting like tired of them and stuff like that. I know that it was a thing, like he was like, there was a story out there that he was like planning on like burying Gunther or something along those lines, like that was apparently coming. Like I think when talent responds like this, normally I don't really think they know, like, and some of that, sometimes that maybe that information maybe goes over their heads maybe and stuff like that. So I don't really know like with exactly where that stands, but like where we are present day, of course I think they are in a way better position, but like I don't, just as far as like that direction that they were going in terms of like him just beating Marcel down every opportunity he got, like it was like, it seemed like it was going okay for Gunther, but I don't know if it was going too well for Marcel. I don't know about his standing as far as that goes. And I know that like there was another thing in there because I know Kushida left WWE at this time, right?
Yeah, we're gonna get into that in the next section, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Kushida had, you know, left WWE, and also I just wanted to touch on the Nash Carter Zachary Wentz release.
Yes,
I saw that that photo of him doing the Nazi salute.
He was in a Hitler outfit, I believe, for Halloween or something like that. If I remember,
yeah. He was doing that. It was a picture that had got thrown up there on social media, and like once I saw that, like I knew it was a wrap. Like, yeah. Cause with WWE, like they're never the ones to react off of allegations, no matter how serious those allegations are, or like, and even though they should, especially in any type of physical abuse, like in any type of abuse for that matter, we should be taken very seriously, but they've never been the ones to like just jump out there and just, you know, let's get this done immediately, let's address this immediately, and let's put it out there. But like once I saw that image and that picture of him, I was like, oh yeah, he is 100% out of there. And like of course that sort of played out on TV as far as Wesley goes, and like we see, like, you know, I think it's been referenced on NXT TV a couple of times, like, you know, his hard struggles this year, you know, him losing his partner, and they don't reference Zach Wentz like directly or anything like that, but they allude to him and all that type of stuff. But yeah, I remember they got stripped of the belts. Well, because of his release, they got Wes had to lose the belt. What was that, like 4 days after they won the belts that happened? Like, that was like a very, very short window that all of that happened. And recently, but this had to be like, I'm gonna say like a week ago, Zach Wentz, he actually did like a virtual one of those virtual signings, and like he wasn't like very talkative about like WWE and stuff like that. Like it was people in the, I think, in the chat room like asking him like, are you gonna go back, like would you be willing to come back, you know, because like you, I don't know if you see it, Josh, but like sometimes there'll be like those you'll have people like advocating to bring him back into the company, like, you know, bring back Nash mm-hmm. Carter and all this stuff. Like I think that's happened a couple times over the past, you know, since he got cut. And like he was very like, you know, never say never, and, you know, supportive of Wesley and things of the sort, like, you know, standard stuff that you would expect as far as like their individual relationship. But yeah, didn't really say too much on that front. But yeah, again, just to repeat what I said, like once I saw that picture, like once I saw that, like once there's like that physical proof, right, I was like, oh yeah, he is out, like, without question.
All right, well, let's talk a little about NXT, since you were just alluding to that. Stand and Deliver happened, obviously, during WrestleMania weekend. Dolph Ziggler and Mandy Rose retained their respective titles. Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez won the vacant NXT Women's Tag Team titles. Cameron Grimes won the North American title. Triple H made an appearance, and that was, again, a surprise appearance, and embraced Tommaso Ciampa, again, essentially saying that he was off and running to the main roster. And then, as you just mentioned, MSK won the NXT tag team titles, but it would only be a couple days later that would change. Bron Breakker later that month won the NXT championship back, but he won it on Raw of all places. Pretty Deadly made their debut on NXT, attacked the Creed brothers, and later in the month they won the NXT tag team titles. Again, you were just talking about that. Toxic Attraction, again, all these title changes, then the titles just went back. Toxic Attraction then regained the women's tag team titles later in the month. Rick Steiner was captured by Harland, remember him, and Joe Gacy on NXT TV. Roxy made her debut and on Level Up. Then she got her new name, Roxanne Perez, later made her debut on the main roster show, or NXT main roster, rather, and defeated JC Jane. Nathan Frazier announced that he was going to be coming to NXT across from the UK. Natalya made her debut, her return to NXT, rather. Attack Cora Jade. This is a part of a big run of WWE main roster stars coming back down to make small cameo appearances and, you know, kind of 2 week angles and so on. Raul Mendoza, Kaylee Ray, and Casey Catanzaro got their new names. Kushida, as you mentioned earlier, he was gone from WWE as his contract expired, and he was expected to return to New Japan following his departure. He would have a couple little stops along the way. There was a loser leaves NXT UK stipulation set for Ilya Dragunov versus Jordan Devlin in their title match, and then for the NXT UK title match, rather. And then later in the month, Dakota Kai, Malcolm Bivens, and Dexter Lumis are among 10 releases from NXT. Thoughts on any of that?
So Josh, I actually want to ask you, like, when you look at Kushida's WWE run, do you think it was just a thing of, like, them just never being able to find that thing that made Kushida connect? Because it always felt like he was just there. Yeah. Like, he was just like another guy, like, in NXT. And, like, honestly, but I don't know if there was anything they could, like, else that they could have done. Like, people would throw out, like, the idea of, like, hey, what about the main roster? That would have not turned out the way you thought it would have turned, like, you think it would have turned out. I think that would have went so bad. Like, it would have been, like, kind of horrendous, like, how bad that run would have been. But like John, just from your take and how you can, like, look at things, like, now that we're months away from, you know, Kushida's departure from WWE, like, how do you sort of assess that, and what was some of the negatives, and if you can find some, like, the positives of, you know, Kushida's running in NXT? Because it was like, it sounds like, when you go back to when did Kushida sign? 2018.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, 2018. It's when you say that in 2018, it sounds good in theory, it looks good on paper, but, like, when you see, like, how it actually played out, it was kind of like, eh.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a classic situation of a Triple H guy that Vince didn't like, and was never going to get a shot on the main roster. It's just not, you know, I think it's just the world outside, and especially at that time. Now, I think it's changed with the new regime, but especially at that time, the world outside WWE is a lot different in terms of what they appreciate in terms of size, work rate, all those type of things. This was there's never going to be a Vince guy. He's never got behind, you know, these type of, I want to say foreign talents, but non-Americans, I guess you could say. People that maybe not speak English that well. It's the Vince playbook. There are certain people that he gets behind. And unless you're big, have some sort of size to you, things like that, you can have all the charisma in the world, but it's going to take an accident like a Bryan Danielson to where it's just like it's undeniable, and I don't think he was ever going to give him that shot. So his run doesn't surprise me. But, you know, look, a lot of people signed because they wanted to just give it a shot and have that thing where they can check it off on the box at the end of the career and say, at least I gave it a run and saw if I could make an impact in the WWE system and just to see what it was like. And I bet if you were to ask him, there were probably some positives he took away from the experience. But overall, you know, was it a waste of time? You know, for him, I don't know. I'm sure there are some frustrations. He regularly working during the pandemic, you know, when they had the closed set tapings and all that. But yeah, I think he said he, I think if you were to ask him, I think he would say it was worth the shot, but ultimately, you know, it just didn't happen. I don't know if he could have done anything differently. I wonder, you know, if he'd still been there today, I still don't think he'd be a main roster call up. Work a main event taping or something like that, but I think because the age and the size and what have you, and just that he's a bigger, this is going to happen with a lot of guys. They're just in women. They're bigger names outside the WWE universe, to use that term, than they ever will be inside. It's just not one of their talents. And I think they have a lot of talents, and that's kind of how my take on it.
Yeah. I think there was some positives, like for Kushida, in WWE, like, you know, he got the Cruiserweight title. I think he got the tag with Alex Shelley at the Dusty Classic. What was that? 2020. He got the
Yes.
Got to reunite the time splitters.
Yes. Damn. Oh my God. Yeah.
He got to do that with you know, he had some real great some good to great matches in NXT. I think he had that one with Gargano at TakeOver that was really good when they were doing some stuff at the PC. Like I just think that he was. It felt like Kushida for like 3 years was always trying to find his footing in WWE, and he just like was like continuously trying to find his footing. And like even when they did like the characters, like not character switch, but like when they when they started letting him wear jeans and stuff like that, and then he went back to just trying out different presentations and like little different stuff that they would try to help him connect and stuff like that. But it just, I don't know, it just never really worked. And like even now that he's back in New Japan, I feel like he's still sort of finding his groove a little bit, because especially because, you know, he had the hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Yes.
And he was out for like 2 months. And I had saw a picture that he posted of like what that like looks like. Dude, that shit is rough. Like it's like skin peeling. You like dots on your face. Like he was like losing like nails falling off. I was like, Jesus Christ. And he was dealing with that for like 2 months.
I had a friend of mine, so kids get this too. But in kids, it's a lot less severe than adults. I had a friend of mine that got this a couple of years ago. He said it was the most painful thing he's ever gone through. It's just you are absolutely miserable. You cannot get comfortable. So yeah, when I saw he had that, I'm like, oh, based on what I've heard, I can feel for him.
Yeah, that just looks like it sucks overall. But like with the I know you mentioned the Roxanne Perez, like we're on the topic of NXT. Like I think that she is a great pickup, a great long-term pickup for them.
Yep.
And I think that they'll sort of nurture her under that. Cause I feel like Roxanne Perez, like she's going to be like I don't want to say the blueprint, but like she's going to be like what they'll sort of go after in terms of like some of these younger independent wrestlers wrestlers from like, they're really young. They can still be brought into that WWE system, quote unquote, broke down and, you know, sort of be rebuilt in the image of what WWE wants them to be. And I think they'll sort of do that as they sort of continue to, you know, look for more talents to bring in and stuff like that. Like, I think like we're looking at it now, I can see Roxanne being the one. I think that she'll win the NXT women's title from Cora Jade at some point, because I think they'll do something along the line, like where there's Mandy, Roxanne, and Cora in a three-way, and Cora steals it from Roxanne, and then that'll be the way to the catalyst to eventually get the Roxanne versus Cora one-on-one for that title, and then, you know, Mandy goes off to the forefront. So I can actually, you know, see something along those lines. And then you know, to your point about the releases, is it kind of crazy to think about how like normal, like that just like it was like just expecting like somebody to be released, like a group of people to be released like every three or so months. Like it really became the norm. And you mentioned like Dakota, Stokely, Loomis, Harlan, Steph DeLander, Draco Anthony, and Malamore Mugnos, who were who were released. Like I think you would agree with this, Josh. I don't think Dakota Cobb was ever going to thrive under a Vince McMahon ran main roster type of program. I don't think that she would have. I think that she probably would have just been like another baddie. She probably would have been used. I think her run probably would have turned out similar to how Toni Storm's WWE run turned out, main roster run turned out. Like, she'd just been another baddie, you know, thrown in tags, you know, stuff like that. You know, she probably would have had like maybe a future story here and there that probably would have came up just by happenstance, just to get across to the next program and stuff like that. And then with Stokely, I don't think Stokely, I don't think he got released. I think that I remember he had did one of those. Did you remember his stand up that he did after
WWE? Yeah, he did. That's right. That's right. He didn't. Yeah, his contract expired. He didn't want it. He didn't. Yeah. That's right. He turned down. You're correct. He turned down. Yeah, he said he turned down a lot of money to stay.
Yeah, Stokely turned him down. And like I thinking about that special, like that had to be one of the funniest things, because I remember he was like, he said that if you want to work in WWE forever, just get transferred to NXT UK, because don't nobody know about them. Oh, nobody knows what's going on over there. And yeah. Then he heard Julius Creed had told him that some of the guys from NXT UK, like, they were talking trash because they found out that he turned down some WWE, that he turned down the WWE deal or some stuff like that. And he was going on about how he was like talking about like top dollar AJ Francis. And he said that he was the blackest man in WWE history, because he started a civil war with the Young Bucks over some shoes. And like, dude, that stand-up special, I mean, it wasn't a stand-up special, but I'm talking about like the clip that he posted on social media. That had to be some of the funniest, like, but most entertaining stuff that I've seen. Like, I think it was that. Like, I think people already knew what he is capable of doing on the microphone, and like what he can do. It, like, you just leave him to his devices. But like that, I feel like that was like the most clear cut example of like how like genuinely funny this dude is. Like, when you just let him do his thing and like just let him talk. And like I think he's allowed to do that in AEW, but I feel like it's like under like a like he has like certain directives that he has to follow, of course, not to, you know, of course, to boost the talent that he's with. But I feel like Stokely as an individual, just left to his devices, I feel like he could do like so much more. So yeah, that's all I got for this NXT topics.
Let's flip to AEW. Not a lot of like huge news throughout the month, so I'll kind of read through these headlines. A lot of like transactional stuff, and obviously this is coming after Revolution in March. But the big news of the month, of course, was the AEW New Japan co-promoter pay-per-view Forbidden Door was finally announced. There's some rumors coming out about that. Finally, it was announced to be set for June 26th in Chicago, Illinois. Didn't know too much about it other than that. But again, Stardom talent, we learned that they were not expected to appear at the show. However, they were hoping to work with AEW in the future. So we'll talk more about that in the months ahead. Tony Khan had this set of tweets that came out at the beginning of the month talking about how anti-AEW sentiment online was driven by a staff running thousands of social media accounts and being signal boosted, and that it was proven by an independent study. It was not, to this day, we have not seen said independent study. Essentially, he was saying that WWE was the ones doing it. And again, we haven't seen the independent study. There's been no indication about this. Had at the post-event press conference, I be able to ask a second question. This is what I was going to ask about, was this, whether this is happening or not. So I hope to still ask if we're ever see this. Did this study exist and all that stuff? But take with that what you will. We learned that the previous month, March 16th, was proclaimed Thunder Rosa Day in Bexar County, Texas. Obviously, that was the day that she won the AEW women's title. Layla Hirsch was injured during AEW Dark Elevation tapings in Boston. I was there for that. Mm-hmm. Same show that Indie Wrestling Hall of Famer Lufisto made her AEW boo at the same Dark Elevation tapings as well. Sammy Guevara won the TNT title from Scorpio Sky at the second ever Battle of the Belts. However, Scorpio Sky regained the title back in a ladder match like nearly 2 weeks later. So the TNT title just flipping between at that point, Cody, Sammy, and Scorpio Sky. Speaking of Thunder Rosa, she took on and defended the title against former AEW Women's Champion Nyla Rose at Battle of the Belts, took care of business there. AEW announced returns to St. Louis and Milwaukee, starting to kind of backfill some dates they missed due to COVID. Dynamite and Rampage, we'll learn they're going to be coming to New Japan World in Japan. And that kind of happened around the same time, I believe, as the Forbidden Door announcement. Tony Khan said the Blood and Guts match is expected to return during the summer. Khan reportedly signed a deal with AEW/Ring of Honor. Jonathan Gresham, it's interesting to see this headline that he had signed a contract with AEW as well. We'll talk more in future months about how that turned out. Willow Nightingale said things are looking positive on her potential future in both AEW or Ring of Honor. Hikaru Shida was announced to be returning back to Japan for a TJPW event, Yes Wonderland. William Regal said he was announcing a podcast, because everyone has a podcast, Andrew, you know that. Jerry Lynn announced he was going to be opening up a wrestling school. Going along the lines of this contract tampering, it was reported that WWE was interested in bringing back FTR. That was something. Alan Angel said in an interview that his much-discussed 2020 Kenny Omega match during the closed taping era was originally given 4 minutes, and they extended it into a little bit longer. Of course, that being so controversial because Omega, quote-unquote, gave him so much. Danny Garcia was once discussed to join the Blackpool Combat Club. Darius Martin, hard luck year for him. Out with a leg injury, he was expected to miss a significant time. Hangman Page had COVID. He had to miss an episode of Dynamite that had to be pretty severely rewritten, I guess you could say, because he was meant to be a big part of the show. Jim Ross was announced to be working with the Rock 7 Bucks Entertainment to go back and look at the territories. It was not revealed what that was going to be. We'd learned that would turn out to be the Vice Tales of the Territory show. CM Punk versus Hangman Page world title match was officially set for Double or Nothing. I believe that was what had to be the show that was initially going to be announced for, had to be rewritten because he had to miss that show. Obviously, that turned out to be a whole thing. Rey Fénix returned to AEW TV after suffering a dislocated arm, I believe it was, from the January TBS debut. Anyway, he returned to TV and confronted the House of Black, so some good stuff on tap there. Deonna Purrazzo was set for her AEW debut to defend the Ring of Honor women's title on Dynamite. AEW's Hook was set to make his indie debut in May. That match actually never happened. I'm still not sure why. Satnam Singh made his AEW debut on Dynamite, attacking Samoa Joe. We'll talk
fucking
about
woof.
I know. We'll talk about this in the Ring of Honor section. And afterwards, Tony Khan revealed that the debut could have gone better because of the way they put the lights down and brought them back up, and people had no idea who Satnam Singh was. Pat Buck, again, out of WWE and reportedly working as producer for AEW. That turned out to be true. Jack Evans announced that his AEW contract wasn't going to be renewed. AEW confirmed that Fight Forever was going to be the name of their console video game, and then Yuka Sakazaki was returning to the company. Thoughts on any of all that?
Man. Josh, you said a lot didn't happen for AEW in April, man. I don't know, man. That was a it was like a lot of notable stuff that happened that month. But like I gotta talk about this that AEW bat story, because that shit is hilarious. Like I'm not denying, because I'm pretty sure there are like what was the term he used, like there was like
bots and what was this? Yeah, it's basically, it's like bots and
what he said, like, it was like a colony of them or something like that. I don't know if that's like his direct verbiage, but like it was like some like a word akin to that, like some along those lines. But like I don't doubt that there is like maybe a group that's like a group of people like maybe doing that stuff. Matter of fact, I don't even think it's that. I just think that there is, it's just as simple as that tribalism thing. And I think it's with both WWE and AEW. You see it all the time. I don't think it's anything new. Like you have those subsection of fans who are diehard AEW, and you have a subsection of fans who, well, bigger than the subsection for both sides. But like you have those group who are very diehard AEW and very, like, not for WWE and vibers like that. And I think for either side, if you were to ask, I feel like you'll hear the opposite of what the other is saying. Like they see that constant negativity, and then of course with AEW they're gonna say they see that constant negativity, and that's because you have that tribalism thing between both fan bases, and that's all you're going to see from either one side, depending on which side you're looking at it. But I did laugh when you said we have yet to see this this independent study. But I am very interested in the day that he does get asked about that. So I think that's a very, very interesting thing. And I kind of forgot that that even happened. So I'm glad that you had that in the notes. And with Khan signing with AEW, like, so firstly, I wanted to touch on the Willow signing. I think that was like a really great pickup for them. Like, fast forward to the present day, like she signed, like, but as we're talking from April, like she said it was looking good, but like as we all know now, she signed to AEW. Like, I think that's a great pickup. Like, I had saw this on I saw somebody tweet this, and this was before she got signed. That Willow, like, she has this thing where like her like bubbly baby face thing, it works and it's not corny. Like, cause a lot of times you see a lot of, like, when you see like the wrestler who's like the bubbly, just the happy, oh, I'm happy to be here, and, you know, I'm just fucking smiles and rainbows, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's you know what I'm saying? Like, it comes off and it's just like, I'm not really feeling it. But she makes it work and it's good, and it, like, that seems like that's like her real, or an extension of her real personality. Like, so I feel like Willow, that's a great addition for the women's division. And then, and to the Khan signing with AEW, I actually wanted to ask you this, Josh, like, what, signing the AEW ROH, do you think that there is really some coming in the new year as far as the ROH television deal? Do you think, like, from what we heard in recent weeks of like Tony Khan in these interviews, you think he's just doing what promoters do and just, you know, just amping it up, and, you know, of course trying to build some steam in the final battle? Or do you think there is legitimately is something coming come 2023, like he said, like he's hoping there would be something in 2023?
I think when he said on the Full Gear media call that they're going to make a decision about Ring of Honor after final battle, that was less optimistic for me. I think, you know, he bought this company in March. It's November 28th as you and I are talking, and there's still nothing. And I think that if they're given the different options out there in which people can get content out and deals they can sign, all that stuff, the fact that nothing has been announced yet leads me to believe that there's nothing on tap. It's possible. You know, he keeps mentioning Time Warner or Warner Bros. Discovery and every conversation, and he essentially, it's like the same record playing over again. He talks about the pay-per-view success and all that, but they haven't bit the bullet yet. And I know there's a bunch of changes going on there, but it's they're in a rough spot with it, because with Ring of, they're two promotions essentially being booked onto one show, because you have two separate sets of titles that you have to maintain and curate and all that stuff. I think that's been a detriment for AEW, because again, it's just a distraction away from what should be the main focus, which is your world title, you know, all that. That should be the focus of people there. So I feel like there isn't, but they got to figure out something. I know he said during the post event press conference at Full Gear that, you know, he wants to do better for Ring of Honor than have them just be a YouTube show, like a Dark Elevation or something like that. I think you're going to have to do something like that if you're not going to, you have to take the Ring of Honor out of AEW and have it be its own thing. If it starts on YouTube, just do it and just kind of figure it out, or just put a pause on it for the time being, although that's going to be kind of awkward because you have these champions that have the titles. It's just, you're booking two promotions in one, and it's muddling the waters. I feel like he would have announced something, but I think we're going to find out in obviously 2 weeks. If there's no announcement at Final Battle of a TV deal of any sort, that's a big red flag for me. It's a huge red flag.
Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what would media want with Ring of Honor? Like what would they want with that brand? They have All Elite Wrestling, like, their own thing. Like, I'm trying to fit, like, okay, you Like, and I don't even know where, like, you would fight a Ring of Honor. Like, hypothetically, even if it was to be positioned on a TBS or a TNT, or like I don't even know where you would slot that, what day it would be on, like how would you even go? I know Tony. I'm trying to remember like exactly what he said, because I remember he did this interview and he was like he doesn't want it to be on like certain days and stuff like that. Like he doesn't want to clash with football. He doesn't want, like with the NFL and stuff like that. He doesn't want to like very specific stuff that he doesn't want that ROH product to be in terms of television and that type of stuff. And then, you know, you just mentioned about that he doesn't want it to be on YouTube. Like I think that what you said might like make the most sense. Like if you gotta start it as just a YouTube show and maybe do like a 1 hour type thing, like, you know, just to get things going, like and then as you find your way, you know, you sort of move it somewhere else with like whatever that might be. But I at first I remember like when people were saying what you were saying, like about like they need to take the ROH like out of AEW and sort of focus on what they had. Like at first I was kind of like, ah, it's fine, you know, it's like, you know, it's whatever. Like, I'm pretty sure it's not that bad, or it's not bad, like it's fine where it's at. But like now I'm starting to see it, like what people are talking about, because it does take up TV time that should be allotted to just strictly the AEW product. And I see that now opposed to months ago where like I was kind of like, oh, it's fine the way it is. So like I would be pretty much like be in line with you right now. Like if we don't get something definitive or at least a formal hype announcement at Final Battle where it's like, hey, expect this in early 2023 as far as like a TV deal or anything or a streaming deal or something along those lines, then I think that pretty much says like everything that you need to know about like where they are in terms of that ROH presentation. And they'll probably just keep doing what they're doing now and just, you know, ROH is AEW and you're going to see the Ring of Honor titles and all that type of stuff on there. So I think that's going to be what it is. But you mind if I talk about the FTR WWE stuff, like how they want him back? Like I know Dax had addressed this. He was on the Wrestling Perspective podcast, and he, you know, he said that he, you know, you respect Tony Khan, and you know he would never go behind his back and, you know, talk with another company or talk with someone else, you know, especially while he's under contract. Like Josh, do you kind of think that like anyone who has had a substantial or any type of success, honestly, under Triple H in NXT, they're always going to have that sort of question mark over their heads, like as far as like would they go back and stuff like that. Like I feel like that's like a stigma that will always follow like those specific talent. Like even like a Keith Lee, like let's say there comes a time when, you know, a report comes out, and this is just hypothetically speaking, like there hasn't been anything that came out about Keith Lee, but I'm just saying like a hypothetical, like, hey, Keith Lee is going to be a free agent at the end of this year, hypothetically, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there will always be that like thing amongst talent that came from NXT and found success under Triple, like, well, you know, would they go back and stuff, like, especially with FTR, they found a great deal of success in NXT under Triple H. Main roster thing didn't really work out, but they did have a very great run in NXT. So, I mean, I don't. Like as far as like let you answer the question first. I was about to go on, but like Josh, do you think there will like always be that stigma for those talents that came from NXT?
I think until they come up on an opportunity to either re-sign with AEW or go back, I think that's kind of where that's where that stigma or that question is going to come up. Is it's always going to be around that until they have the opportunity to decide, and if WWE even wants them back at that point, if they're given the opportunity to decide between a Triple H-led WWE or staying with AEW, if that option is available, that's going to answer a lot of your questions.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what I think, yeah.
And what's in that, on your point about Darius Martin, like, dude, that's just, like, he can't catch a break. Like, he cannot catch, like, it's been 2 years now since Top Flight signed.
Yeah.
I think they signed in November 2020. I don't think they've really been able to find their footing, of course, because the injury, like he was out the ACL injury, and then, you know, he was in the he had that unfortunate car accident, which they've now made public, like that's out there now. I think the first time that like anybody like heard of that, I think Malachi Black had like he had like accidentally said something about it in an interview, and like that's sort of how that got around. But it seems like now, like especially since they've been back, like he's like Darius sort of getting his bearings about and stuff like that, and it seems like he's finding his groove, and you know, it's seemingly all things are going well. So yeah, hopefully they can just stay the course. Like I hope it's not one of those situations where like sort of the boat is sort of you know, sailed on top flight. Like I don't think that's the case, but like you just never know. Like I think wrestling is always a real like what have you done for me lately type of thing. Like and if you aren't in people's minds constantly, like you kind of just get cast away to the wayside, unless you're like this big mega star where people are just constantly anticipating you or constantly, you know, hearing from you in the news cycle and stuff like that. So hopefully they're able to, you know, kick things off, you know, as things going, you know, as things continues for them AEW. And like so the last thing that I wanted to touch on was Deonna Purrazzo's AEW debut. Man, Josh, she looked like she belongs there. That's all I like really got to say. Like she came out and like they had her whole setup and stuff. I was like, dude, like this, like I feel like there's going to come a point for Deonna, especially with like over the what she's done over the past 2 years with this sort of, you know, revamping herself into what she is now. I feel like she's going to be fielding offers from WWE. She's going to be fielding an offer from Impact. She's going to be fielding an offer from AEW, and she's going to have to make a choice about which one she's going to go to. And I can understand from like a personal perspective, like that wanting to show that loyalty to Impact, because like they brought her in after WWE let her go, and then like they made her a star, and like she capitalized on it, and she is exactly that. And I think she's one of the marquee talents in that division, and she's a great wrestler, obviously. So like I think it's going to be a difficult choice to make, but I like when I saw a Dynamite against that what was that, the ROH Women's World Championship Unification match against Mercedes Martinez.
Yes. Yep.
I was like, man, she belongs like on that stage. I definitely think it's gonna be a interesting thing for Deonna Purrazzo, like when that time comes for her to make that choice, because she gonna have to choose between one of those three companies about where she wants to be. And I personally think that she would fit great in AEW. I think that would be like an ideal landing spot for her. I don't really know about WWE, because I don't know how Triple H like views her. Like maybe things change present day, like you just never know. But I think that if Deonna were to go back, I think she'll be in a similar position to how Emma Tennille Dashwood is being presented. And assumingly, if Chelsea Green is going back, I think that Chelsea Green will be sort of in that similar role. Like they'll just be another body to the division, and you know, they'll be filtered in and out of storylines, but not like the primary focus. I feel like in AEW, Deonna, she'll have maybe a greater chance of becoming a standout talent, possibly. That's up in the air as well. But yeah, I definitely think she'll have a choice to make when that time comes.
I would agree. Ring of Honor. We talked a little bit about them already, but they obviously had Supercard of Honor during April, the first pay-per-view under the Tony Khan regime. Chavo Guerrero was announced he was going to be managing Bandido at the event. Tony Khan said that William Regal would be at the show and was teasing a show-ending surprise that people could not miss. Brian Cage was introduced as Tully Blanchard's client at the event. AEW's FTR won the ROH World Tag Team titles against the Briscoes, and arguably the match of the entire WrestleMania weekend, one of the best ones of the year. Wheeler Yuta won the Pure title, and it was announced as an All Elite that he had officially signed his contract. Samoa Joe was the big surprise. signed with AEW and appeared at the Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor. And then Jonathan Gresham was crowned undisputed Ring of Honor champion, defeating Bandido at in the main event of the night. The event brought in reportedly more than 20,000 pay-per-view buys. It was a big success for Ring of Honor, considering that they, you know, didn't have really. It was just this is coming off really it's just AEW promotion and Khan owning it, but more than 20,000 pay-per-view buys. Khan said he was having more conversations with Warner Media about growing Ring of Honor. Again, this is back in April, and we sit here in almost December, and nothing has happened. As we just alluded to a few minutes ago, we talked about Samoa Joe won the TV title from Minoru Suzuki on AEW Dynamite, Suzuki being Tracy Williams, I believe, at the Supercard of Honor show to win the Ring of Honor TV title, which at the point that point when it happened, it was kind of odd, but obviously in the days after, it would make a lot of sense why that would happen. They aired their final episode on their Sinclair Broadcast Group station, so that answered that question about whether they were going to remain there. Maria Kanellis Bennett said that she and Khan had talked about a potential Ring of Honor role, and then Khan said that someday combined Ring of Honor or AEW show may make sense. I think we're a long ways away from that. Mm-hmm. But I know we talked a lot about Ring of Honor. Any brief thoughts on any of that stuff?
So I got a hot take, Josh.
All right.
I'm probably going to get cooked for this, but you know what? I don't even care. It is what it is. Like, the FTR Briscoes match, I didn't think it was all that.
Really?
I didn't think it was all that. It was good. It wasn't bad. The reason I say that is because I watched the match late. Like I watched it like a month late. Like I didn't because when that show was happening, I was at the GCW World on Lucha show, and then like just with WrestleMania, and then like covering the news and stuff like that. Like I just didn't really find the time to like watch it. And like I watched it like a month late. But like when I saw it, like I mean when I saw like the stuff on social media, like dude, people was like, oh man, this is the greatest match of the year. Like I can't believe what I just saw. And like I was excited to watch. So when I finally got to watch, I'm like my expectations that I set for this match was like unfair in a way. And I think that's why I feel the way I do about the match. And I watched it, and I even watched it back, like just to make sure I felt the way I really felt about it. And like, I think for me, like it was like, just what I said about it is I'm trying to figure out like a way to explain it, but like I felt like what I just said is like the best way I can explain. I feel like I just set like an unreal expectation based off of all the tweets and all the hype that I saw off of social media, and I sort of just put this unfair stamp on this match, like subconsciously. And so when I watched it, I was like, that's the match. Mm-hmm. It was not bad in the slightest. It was a good match. Like I enjoyed the hell out of the match, but like I just didn't think like it was just like out of worldly. Like, oh, this is like this thing I've seen this year. I was gonna bring this up about your point about Willie Yuta, when he won the ROH Pure title, and then he got the All Elite graphic, and then he went on and had that that banger with Moxley on Rampage. I think that was a better match than the FTR Briscoes. I think that match that Moxley had with you to smoke that FTR Briscoes match, like in just in comparison between the two. But like again, it wasn't a bad match. I don't think it was bad in any stretch of the imagination. I think it was a really, really good match. I enjoyed it. Like I would show it to anybody. I really would. But I just think I put this unfair expectation on it based on all the stuff that I saw on social media and the way people were talking about it and heralding it as this like all time classic. And I watched it and I'm like, I don't think it was that. I think it was a good tag team match. And like I'm probably the only person who feels that way. I'm not trying to be public enemy number one, Josh. So I might have you edit this out because I ain't trying to get cooked. So. but nah, man, it's it was a good match, bro. Is that a hot take? Like, I don't really know if that is it. Like, do you think it is?
I think there's a lot of wrestling on TV, and I think this happens with a lot of stuff that we, you know, movies,
yeah.
match, TV show, anything like that where it's stuff's been built up and then you kind of see it and then it's like, oh, okay. Like, I think everyone expects, you know, the highest level. And then, it's, you know, and I thought it was really good. I watched it on that Monday after, but, I can see there's a lot of factors. It's when people watch it, there's a lot of great wrestling. So I can see where if someone's like, it wasn't my favorite or whatever, I can understand just because of how much stuff there is to take in these days, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But like, I just wanted to make sure I'm wearing like, crazy when I said, because like I saw people, they was like, I remember because I was at, when I said again, I was at the World on GCW show when that happened in during WrestleMania week, and like I was looking on Twitter and I was like, people was like, oh man, this is the one of the greatest matches I ever seen. And I was like, my whole time like I was talking about this match, it was like, it's excellent match. And I was like, okay, I gotta see it, but I didn't watch it until like a month later. So like that sort of mindset has sort of worn off already. But I had already had like a mental note in my head that of the expectation that I had for. But you know, it was again, let me just say it was a good match and stuff like that. But yeah, it just wasn't my view of the match just wasn't in line with what everybody else thought. But like you mentioned the Sat Now I'm Seeing debut, like Josh, I think you would probably agree, like I think it would have been more effective if like you just had this dude just come from out of the tunnel and like walk down to the, like, this is a 7 foot tall person, like I just by his sheer size alone, he would have turned the visual of the hard cam being on the audience and everybody's head turning to the entrance way and seeing them or everybody standing up being like, who the hell is that? I think it would have done way more than the lights off, lights on thing. Cause like, right. you usually when that happens, you know what I'm saying? You expecting big name free agent or they, you know, you expecting a big name within AEW, or you're expecting a free agent coming in and stuff like that. That's the norm that you would expect. And like for, like I just think it was a misfire on AEW's part. And then on top of that, I don't know if you remember, Josh, when Tony Khan had did that interview after, and I think it was on Busted Open when he said that wasn't his idea, and he sort of like deflected it onto somebody else, and then like people sort of jumped on him on social media for that. They was like, oh, you should have, you can't just be, you know, throwing blame at your fellow colleagues and stuff like that, saying like he was very adamant like that this was not his idea, like he wanted to do something completely like something different. And he listened to, he said, I think he said the person that he listened to has like 20 some years of experience that he listened to, and he was just like, it wasn't my idea. Yeah, and I was like, I don't know if you should be like deflecting it like that. Like, I mean, of course, like nobody wants to be the one that's like, oh, well, you know, it's my fault and stuff like that. But like, I think he could have just, I think he could have took that one on the chin for the team.
100%. All right, let's go to Impact. We'll run through these. Ace Austin signed a new multi-year deal with the company. They had two events during the month. The Multiverse of Matches as part of WrestleMania weekend, WrestleCon rather. Josh Alexander and Jonah defeating Moose and PCO. The Good Brothers defeated the Briscoes. First time ever they had squared off. Tomohiro Ishii made his Impact debut and took on and defeated Eddie Edwards, because that was going to set up for some other things throughout the month. Three title changes took place at Impact Rebellion, that being Josh Alexander finally regaining the world title by defeating Moose in the main event. Ace Austin, we just talked about him, regained the X Division title over Mike Bailey and Trey Miguel in a three-way. And then Taya Valkyrie defeating Deonna Purrazzo. We just talked about her, defeating her for the AAA Reina de Reinas title. Valkyrie announced her return to Impact, and again, she was challenging Purrazzo at Rebellion, so that was announced earlier in the month. Savannah Evans signed a multi-year deal with the company. We learned that the Good Brothers contracts were set to expire in July. AJ Francis said he had at that point very good conversations with Impact Wrestling, that being, of course, Top Dollar. That would not happen. Jonathan Gresham was off the Rebellion pay-per-view, and a new match was made instead. He was off, I believe, due to injury, which we'll talk about later. Slammiversary was announced for June. And then Alexander versus Tomohiro Ishii, a world title match, was set for May's Impact Under Siege. And that the Inspiration, former Knockouts tag team champions, were indefinitely step away from in-ring action. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, so what Savannah signing her multi-year contract, like it's sort of, she's connected to Tasha Steelz on AEW TV. Like Josh, I don't know if it's been confirmed or not, but like and I don't want to, like, we can speculate like on stuff like this, but like I would prefer like to have like concrete information. But like so 2 years ago, right, this was November 2020 when this happened. Tasha had did an interview with on the Gallows and Anderson Talking Shop podcast, and they like dude, they like straight up asked Kiera and Tasha like when their contracts expire, when their contracts with Impact expired. And Kiera, like, of course, like Kiera's gone, she's in AEW. She said hers was up in July. But Tasha has said that her contract, she had 2 more years left on it from that month. And it's November 2022 now. And Tasha had did an interview, I think earlier this month, where she was like discussing her future, and she was like when, or she was talking about like different options, like about AEW and WWE, and like which one she would rather go to. And like, of course, she'd be open to, staying with Impact as well. And like, I mean, just from speaking on the timeline in terms of like what she said in that interview 2 years ago, like you would assume that she's a free agent unless like there was signed some type of extension signed, or like she would be a free agent at the end of this, at the end of this month. Like I honestly, Josh, I would not be surprised if Kiera getting kicked out of the baddies was to set up for Tasha Steelz coming in and them reuniting Flyin' Flava. I really wouldn't be surprised like if that was a thing. I'm like, I know Diamante is like the option that everybody's like eyeing, because it's like the obvious thing that's like right there in your face. Like why wouldn't you go that route? But like I honestly think that, oh, I wouldn't be surprised, I should say, that if Kiera getting kicked out of the baddies, that's like Tasha, she's coming in. Like, do you think that like with the information presented, like what I just said, would you be surprised if that was the go?
Yeah, I could see that. If she had offers,
Yeah.
I mean, based on, Kiera kind of came in, and they haven't really done a lot with her. Like, she's been this baddies group, but it just,
Yeah.
from an in-ring standpoint, they really haven't like used her a lot, which, so I
Yeah.
think there's probably, some sort of disappointment there, I would assume. But yeah, I mean, I think that would definitely make sense. I hadn't even thought of that before, but yeah, I mean, I think both were at Steels, and obviously she had a run with the Knockouts title
Yeah.
before as well, but that tag team was pretty good. So, AEW doesn't have women's tag team titles yet. I wouldn't be surprised if that day comes by, by the end of 2023. But yeah, I think it just all depends what people are looking for in their career at that point. And she may be happy. She may be thinking it may be time to leave the territory and do something different. Impact may think we need maybe just time to kind of freshen things up a bit. But yeah, I think that's an interesting thought. I would not be surprised if that happens.
So one of the things, man, about one of the topics that you listed, man, the Good Brothers, like what they've done over the past, so you say like 5 months or so, like I'm always like shocked at like how these dudes somehow find themselves like in the best positions possible. It's all like hilarious to me, like how Gallows and Anderson like somehow, some way, find themselves in a position where they are always like in a beneficial spot. Like it always benefits them. Like it's like it don't matter if they like if like the company they work for or something along those lines is getting the short end of the stick. Like they're always the beneficiary. Like even with but with just this New Japan stuff, like. And I know it got reported that New Japan, they've known since August that Gallows and Anderson were going back and stuff. But like, I remember I was even saying this. I'm like, New Japan, like the fact that they even had Carl Anderson running around with their never open weight title. I mean, it's not like the never open weight title is like some big deal. Like it's, it just is what it is. But like the fact that he was just running around with the title, like no. Anything but like a formal agreement between them, like I'm talking about someone on paper, like, and it was just more so of a verbal handshake type of thing. And like you sort of find yourself in this situation like where maybe you have to agree to something like that, because he is you know, going back to WWE and still had your title and stuff like that. But not like, you know, now what he's going to be defending the title at the World Tag League Finals in a couple weeks. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But, yeah, I'm always sort of shocked at how Gallows and Anderson, like, they somehow find themselves, like, in these positions, man. Like, I got to call it what it is, but they are, I don't want to say good businessmen, but they just always know where to be and how to go about certain situations.
It's a Brock Lesnar. It's the Brock Lesnar, right? Always in the right spot at the right time, man.
They always are in the right spot at the right time. Like, that's the best way to put it. But yeah, good old guys and Anderson, man. They always know what to do.
All right, we'll go through Japan again. I'm not a big Japanese wrestling watcher, but we'll go through some of the various results and news of the month, and I'll kick it over to you. We had the Lone Star Shootout. This took place over WrestleCon, WrestleMania weekend. Jay White defeated Mike Bailey in what was said to be a really great match. Minoru Suzuki wrestled everybody everywhere. I think you and I, we may have wrestled at some point. Minoru Suzuki defeating Killer Cross at that show. Tomohiro Ishii defeating Chris Dickinson. John Moxley made an appearance at the show. Great O'Conn received a letter of appreciation from saving a girl from an assault. New Japan Windy City Riot results. John Moxley defeating Will Ospreay. Really said to be a really solid match there in the main event. Scott Norton, remember him, returned for a 12-man tag as part of that show. AEW's The Factory and Wheeler Yuta appeared on the show as well. Jay White defeated Shota Umino. Minoru Suzuki defeated Tomohiro Ishii. And then New Japan had to issue an apology for streaming issues during Windy City Riot. And there were some issues they had going on there. Michael Elgin announced he was returning to Pro Wrestling Noah. What a year for Michael Elgin. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Minoru Suzuki, and Tomohiro Ishii were announced for the Strong Philadelphia tapings. New Japan announced dates for the G1 Climax 32 tournament. They held Hyper Battle, where Okada defeated Zack Sabre Jr. to retain the IWGP World title. Sanada vacated the IWGP United States title. Francisco Akira made his debut at Hyper Battle and joined the United Empire. And
I really like him, Francisco Akira.
I really
like that dude, man. I'm telling you, like, he's a good wrestler, but like I feel like he's like he can be something of a really great hand for that junior heavyweight division at New Japan. I didn't mean to cut you off, Josh, my bad.
Oh, go for it, yeah. No worries. Jeff Cobb and Great O'Conn defeat Yoshihashi and Hiroki Goto to win the IWGP Tag Team titles. The company is reportedly starting to secure Japanese visas for foreign talent to start bringing them over. Again, still kind of in the wake of the height of the pandemic, starting to bring some foreign talent, or planning so to bring more and more over, preferably from the United States. They revealed the full card for Wrestling Dontaku, and then Will Ospreay and Tatsumi Fujinami had to be pulled off that show due to COVID-19. Sad story, Shinjiro Otani was conscious and able to move his limbs following injury at the 0-1 show. He had to undergo spinal cord injury. They suffered and had to undergo surgery, rather, for that. They announced a benefit show, so that was obviously a sad story whenever you see that. Chris Dickinson signed a deal with New Japan. Juice Robinson said he was going to leave the company when his contract expired at the end of April. Moxley issued a challenge to Hiroshi Tanahashi for New Japan, a Capital Collision. So we talk more about that as the year goes on. Also Capital Collision, Brody King versus Minoru Suzuki was set. Eddie Kingston challenging Tomohiro Ishii. Noah's Fujita vacated the GHC heavyweight title, and Go Shizaki later won the title later on in the month. New Japan announced Ignition tapings for June. And then AEW's Buddy Matthews and Swerve Strickland were set to work for New Japan Strong. Lot there. Thoughts on any of that?
So real quick, just to start off, John, did you see the Eddie Kingston Ishii match from Capital Collision, right?
I actually have not seen that. This goes back to some of the stuff that, because there's so much wrestling, the stuff we eventually want to get to, that's on the list. I did see, obviously, the second one they had in AEW, but I did not see that one, yeah.
Hey, Josh, let me tell you something. That is one of my favorite matches of the year, hands down. Because I was there when that happened, because that was in D.C., man, Kingston and Ishii, bro, they tore that shit down. Like, that was one of my favorite matches. Banger. Like, I just had to get that out there. So when we start having these like match of the year discussions, anybody that like when he, please expect me to have this like at least in my top 10. Like that was a really, really great one, man. But just to, I guess to start off, like looking at it, the Great O'Conn thing when he received a letter from saving the girl from the assault, like that was like a big deal. Like I know Yahoo Japan, they did like this feature on O'Conn, like they got like a detailed recap from him after he gave his statement to the police about like what exactly happened and like what he thought was happening. Like he said that initially he thought like that was like a father and daughter like arguing or something along those lines, or like thought like the girl must have been like, you know what I'm saying, like a kid like acting up in front of her parents and stuff like that. Like that was like the first thing in his head. And then like he said like it was like her reaction and how like how scared she looked, like he or like how nervous she looked, like that's when he, like it sort of snapped in his head or clicked in his head that like that was like not her father and stuff like that. And like that's when he sort of reacted from there and went on from there. So yeah, shout out to Great O'Conn, man, saving the day. That was real, real big on him. But yeah, the one of the things that's probably like the most disheartening thing is the Shinjiro Otani situation, because I remember covering that the day that happened, because that was at the Zero One Pro Wrestling Zero One show, and he was wrestling I think he was wrestling I don't want to butcher his last name. I think his last name is Segura. I think that's his that's his first name. Hold on, because I'm searching the name right now, so I'm trying to stall. Takashi Segura. That's his name. He was the they was wrestling for the Zero One World Heavyweight Title, and what happened was it was like the final. Like coming down to the final stretch of the match, and Segura gave Otani a German suplex into the turnbuckle pad, and you know in Japan they have the like it's not like any open spaces within those turnbuckles. It's like just that open pad. It's just the pad right there. Like that's what it is. And he gave him a German, and like it looked like his neck like got folded. It just looked bad, and you could tell something was wrong immediately. But you didn't. I mean, because with wrestling, you just not like maybe selling it and stuff like that. I'm talking about like just from initially seeing it, and then like you quickly realize like that this is like a serious thing. Like when you see people coming in the ring, and like I saw people like they was like taking his boots off and stuff like that, like untying his shoes and like taking off his wrist tape, and like that. That's when like it sets in, like it's like a legit thing. Like he's like really hurt, and I know it got Yeah, like you said, he underwent surgery for a cervical spinal cord injury. And like it's sad, man, because even to this day, like you get these updates on Otani. I think the latest one was last week. Like he's paralyzed. Like he still can't move from the neck down. And like the only type of communication that he's had so far, he's in the hospital, and they set up this thing for him, like where he can type like with his chin. Or something along those lines, like the hospital set up this thing like where he can like, you know, use his phone and like send out tweets, but like he's like typing stuff like with his chin, like he's like sending stuff out and stuff like that. Like it's like a whole thing, man. But yeah, he's paralyzed from the neck down, and like this, like how you just said, like this is in April, dude, and like we're in almost at the end of the year now, and no progress on his front. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you can only assume the worst in terms of like a recovery and stuff like that, especially at this point. And it's sad that, you know, his career, like this is like the assumingly the end of like his professional wrestling career, that is it. Like, you know, you go down and, you know what I'm saying, you're paralyzed, bro. Like that's rough. And I you know, feel for his family and stuff like that, and feel for him, of course. I'm pretty sure that's a shitty feeling as a wrestler. Like, you know, we've seen people be hurt like this and before in wrestling, but I'm pretty sure that's just like a shitty feeling, dude, like to know that this is that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like you don't get to, you know what I'm saying? Like that's the final bow on your career right there, is you took a move wrong, or you just took a move and it was just bad placement or whatever you want to do, man. And it just turned out the way it turned out. And I know Segura, he was doing like some, because he works with Pro Wrestling Noah as well. And he did like a press conference, like this was like almost like a month after it happened. And like the person who was leading the press conference, they had sort of asked the press not to like badger him berate him with questions about it, because he was like real emotional. Cause like he felt like he was responsible for ending Ohtani's career. And like he was like real emotional when he was on stand, and like the dude who was running the press conference, like sort of directed to the media, was like through a translation that I had read, that you know, he was like, don't like just we're gonna get this out the way. But like after this, like don't ask him like no more questions about this. You know what I'm saying? Like just let him be. Like obviously he feels bad and stuff like that. So yeah. Prayers up to Shinjiro Ohtani, man. Like, you can only hope that something is going to get better from here. But, like, dude, like, this was in April, Josh. You know what I'm saying? Like, this, and we're at where we're at now. So, yeah, blessings to him and his family. With the Pro Wrestling Noah and their GHC heavyweight title scene, I think the GHC heavyweight champion right now is Kaito Kiyomiya. I think he's the GHC heavyweight champion right now. But like I think at the time, I think it said Kazuyuki Fujita was the champion. Like it was like a running joke for a lot. They just keep putting their titles, like avoiding strapping like their like core roster members right now. Like it was even a joke, like if Chris Jericho wanted to go to Noah right now, I promise you they put the world title on this dude. And if Chris Jericho wanted to get another world title running after this ROH world title win, I'm pretty sure if he wouldn't know it, they'd give it to him. Like they,
I'd agree.
They really would. And yeah, just on the sort of on the continuing on the Japan front, like oh yeah, Josh, I wanted to ask, like you know, with Moxley signing his new deal, like see Moxley on this on the rundown a little bit. When do you think the next time that we'll see, like, you know, John Moxley, especially with him signing his new deal? When do you think the next time we'll see Moxley, like, you know, be like in the GCW or in New Japan, or do you think that his duties with AEW, his newly found duties with AEW, are going to take up the brunt of, you know, the next years of his career?
I think if I was a betting man, I would say he would call it the second quarter of 2023 as part of some sort of build to Forbidden Door. On a New Japan show, kind of as a surprise. I think he could do a GCW show, but I think he's going to probably take the rest of the year off after losing the title, take that vacation he was supposed to take. And my guess is second quarter of 23 as part of the lead in for New Japan show, and that he will appear in, we'll call it, I bet he'll appear in two GCW shows next year in 2023. That's my guess.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
All right. Well, we got one more. Speaking of GCW, my friend, we have one last stretch to go. The junk drawer. This is everything else that happened.
Hey, Josh, real quick. I saw the note that you put down about Juice leaving NJPW.
Yes.
Like Juice is signed with AEW, right?
He is now. Yes. I'm trying to remember now. All the headlines are kind of going together. Yeah, I think that was. I don't think they have officially announced it. And he hasn't been on the show, but yeah, or since then. But yeah, I think that was a deal, and there was no like refuting of that. So I think he signed under one of those tiers of deals that they have.
Okay. Cool.
All right. So we'll go through the best of the rest. Okay. So Jonathan Gresham, we mentioned he was injured. He was pulled from two Progress shows. He was their champion, so he's pulled from Sunday and Monday shows. Over the course of one of the weekends, obviously he had to miss an Impact show as well. Joey Nelson, again, this is just a glut of shows that took place over WrestleMania weekend. Two nights of Spring Break 6, of course, Joey Janela's shows for GCW. Some of their very results, John Moxley, we just talked about him, defending his then GCW title over AJ Gray. Joey Janela defeating X-Pac. X-Pac revealed that he was working the match with torn biceps that were going to require surgery, but he didn't want to miss the date. Mickey James made her GCW debut. Minoru Suzuki defeated Effie in a match I never thought I'd see. And then the Briscoes won the GCW tag team titles. There was a WrestleCon Super Show, which featured Bandido versus Mike Bailey, Ishii versus Timothy Thatcher. The Bandido-Bailey match won the newly announced $5,000 bonus for the best show at WrestleCon Super Show as well. There's obviously Bloodsport that happened that weekend as well. Alexander Hammerstone versus Richard Holloway title match was set to headline MLW's Kings of Coliseum show, which is going to be one of their next TV tapings after WrestleMania weekend. They said that the first women's featherweight champion was going to be crowned at that show. Not coincidentally, Ty Valkyrie was signed, returned to the company during that same show. And also the Sandman as well, because you can't have a show in Philadelphia at the 2300 Arena without the Sandman lurking around somewhere. MLW had Intimidation Games, which took place at WrestleMania weekend. Hammerstone defeating Jacob Fatu and Mads Kruger in a three-way match.
I was there for that.
You were. Yeah. And then Swerve Strickland also returned out of the taping as well. That was a little bit of a surprise. And, of course, he didn't even win in his return. I was surprised he won, too. Were you there? So Los Parks were fired from MLW due to a brawl at the TV tape. Were you there for that, too? That was the Lucha Underground or the Azteca Underground the night before, right? Or two nights before?
Yeah, the Azteca Underground, I think that was the following day. I didn't go to that one, but they were in at it was an incident that happened between them and I believe Hammerstone, something along those lines, and there was a brawl, and like you want to know, it was so weird because I remember when I was looking at it, like LA Park he hit Hammerstone in the back with a chair, and like it. I don't know, Hammerstone, like because I was like right there when it happened. Like I was sitting in like a really good spot, like near the bar section, and like he hit him, and like I don't know, Hammerstone, but he just looked like he wasn't like expecting that, and like he didn't like really react to the chair shot. He reacted like any like regular person like would look being hit by a chair, like what are you doing? Like in like they sort of had like a little shoving match, like as they went to the backstage area, mm-hmm. But I mean, like when stuff like that happens, especially in wrestling, y'all, like you know, like it's like, could it be like you know just some part of the show? Like you just never know because you don't want to interpret some or put some information out there that could be wrong. You know what I'm saying? And then mm-hmm. like not do your due diligence by it. But like now we know that it was like a legit thing. Like you could just tell that it was something off between that. Like, and maybe it was like a miscommunication issue or like something along those lines. But yeah, you could definitely tell like in that moment that, you know, that was not supposed to go. I went. I'm assuming that it just, you know, carried over until to that next day, you know, when they got let go and stuff like that, or when they finished up or whatever. So
right,
yeah, that was quite the ordeal, Josh. Quite the ordeal, man.
MLW responded to WWE's motion to dismiss the antitrust lawsuit. They're not backing down. That case obviously still going on. MLW signed Juicy Fanoh to a multi-year deal. PWG announced a full card for their Delivering the Goods event set for May. CMLL's Raziel passed away just 49 years old. WWE Hall of Famer Tammy Sonny Sitch suspected of DUI in a fatal car crash and was sued over the traffic accident, fatal traffic accident. Again, that could be a headline in any month, it seems. Just a complete mess of a person. What a life. Johnny Gargano, at this point, still a free agent, said a big part of him wants to only wrestle until he's 40. Kurt Angle wishes probably he could wrestle till he's 80, underwent double knee replacement surgery, or set for double knee replacement surgery for May. As quickly as the Briscoes won the GCW tag team titles a couple weeks later, they lost them to Effie and Allie Catch at GCW Paranoid. Bandito No-Show, GCW Devil in New Dress issued a statement. There are multiple talents that didn't appear as advertised on that show. Bandito would work some other events from later on in the year. Lindsay Dorado asked the Crash promotion to remove from a match against Mario Skrull and Travis Banks, obviously due to their questionable pasts. Maria Kanellis announced she was launching the Women's Wrestling Army Project. Virgil was revealed he had dementia. Bret Hart, big weekend for, seven announcers for FTR outside AEW, as Big Time Wrestling was co-promoting or promoting some of their various indie shows, and Bret Hart was going to be in their corner for one event, and then Mick Foley was going to manage them in another match. So obviously FTR living their best life on the indies. GCW and IWTV reached a settlement in the lawsuit over the pay-per-view rights with Fight TV. That was a whole thing where GCW started moving all their pay-per-views to Fight. IWTV had an agreement with them, and eventually they agreed on what was called the Settlement Series, which is wrapping up. Of course, now GCW on Fight full-time. Killer Kross and Scarlett Bordeaux got married, I believe, on an iceberg somewhere in Alaska, if I'm remembering right. Remember watching that video. Adam Windsor, an indie wrestler that had a couple shots in WWE, just not a lot there, passed away due to a heart issue. NWA announced Always Ready coming for June, a pay-per-view themed around Matt Cardona, who would not be able to actually work the show due to an injury. The Briscoes had to pull off weekend shows for GCW and PWG due to a family medical emergency that was related to, I believe it was Jay's wife that was pregnant and had to go in.
Yeah.
There were some issues. Everything turned out to be okay, but that was a little bit of a scary situation there. Chris Dickinson, we've mentioned his name a few times. He had to pull out of a GCW event following domestic abuse allegations. Bray Wyatt and JoJo Offerman, again, both at this point formerly WWE, got engaged. And then Bo Dallas, remember him, said he was planning to
Uncle Howdy.
That's right. He planned to return to the ring very soon. And we still don't know where that is, but I think we kind of think we know where it's going. Thoughts about any of that?
Man, that was a... So I'm looking at the list. And I mean, I guess we could start with... Go ahead and start with Bo Dallas because that was the most recent thing. Like, I remember when he did that that virtual signing and he was like, "Yeah, I'm planning my turn in the ring," you know, and all that stuff. Like, it all sounded good, you know what I'm saying? Because like, and the crazy thing is, bro, Bo is like, what is Bo like 30? But he is young. That's a bro, especially considering the fact that he's been in WWE. He was in WWE for that long.
Yeah,
it seemed like, and like he got in WWE, he was like a teenager. So like now, that he's
32,
like Bo is young, man. He's still very, very young. And I think that you guys, you guys have reported over at FOW Online. I believe specifically it was Brian Alvarez who reported that Bo Dallas is back with WWE. I don't think we got like any like formal confirmation about that, but I think a lot of people are sort of speculating about the, you know, who Uncle Howdy is, who's the person that's playing that character, and it could be Bo Dallas. Like, Josh, did you even see like people had saw that Uncle Howdy, the character, was wearing like the same earring that like Bo Dallas had from like three years ago? People got to be the best detectives in the history like of the world. Like they found like an image of Bo Dallas from a promo that he was doing like in 2019, and him wearing this exact same earring that Uncle Howdy was wearing in his the initial first promo. Let me just say this real quick. First and foremost, I hope that this is just like some Uncle Howdy that thing is like just some like figment of Bray Wyatt's imagination, and like not like some actual character that's gonna be like rest. I am not trying. Like, I feel like that is going to be the goofiest shit in the world if whatever that is like starts wrestling and stuff like that. I would much prefer that just to be like a thing that like is in Wyatt's mind, is like talking to him and stuff like that. It's cool the way it is. I don't need to see the Uncle Howdy mask and all that stuff wrestling. That's just, I don't know, that ain't my jam right there. But yeah, Bo Dallas, man, he still got a lot to offer, I would assume. So, you know, I guess we'll see when that time comes. Looking at the other stuff, like with the the stuff with Marty Scurll and Travis Banks, like I genuinely do not know how promotions like would even want them like on their shows. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like with the stuff that's out there and the stuff that has been said and the stuff that has been admitted to, it's like I don't even know how you even want, like why would you want that type of publicity? Or like, what, like even if you're not gonna do it from a moral standpoint, where you just like, I don't want them on my show.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want that from a publicity standpoint? Like, if you're not gonna do it from a morally, like, you know, morally good standpoint, then like, at least be smart about it business wise. Like, why would you want that type of negative attention coming to your show? Because there's nothing positive that's gonna come from that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's relationships, and some of those sometimes die hard.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Certain people have certain beliefs about things, and they're, you know, it's just a yeah, it's just the way that, I don't know, it's messed up.
It's the way
up.
People are.
It's messed up. But yeah, I mean, yeah. But you see any time that some of these talents try to get work in the States, that gets
yeah.
I mean, that gets snuffed out pretty quick to the point they're not even trying. I remember, was it last year, Velveteen Dream was trying to get a booking. And
yeah.
That within, I think, 90 minutes was from announcement to it got canned. So yeah, they can't, people can't hide.
It was that same day.
Yeah.
It was that same day.
It was like the same 2 hours. Yeah.
But yeah, like that's a real good, great point you brought up about Dream. But like, just to piggyback over what you were saying, like I genuinely don't know how, like, you even want that as a promoter. But like you said, you know, a good point. Like sometimes, but you know, friendships and relationships that hard, man. And people ride who they ride with. And I mean, you know, and I think especially coming out of speaking out, like 2 years removed from that, like you can see like wrestlers sort of making. The rest of those, some wrestlers who were accused and that, like making their way back into stuff like that. Like, I mean, if we've been like completely honest, like even, like, you know, Josh Briggs, who's on NXT right now, like he got named to speaking out. JD McDonagh got named to speaking out. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's just, you know, like, I knew back then, like some people were saying like this was going to happen. Like, you know, wrestlers who got named in that stuff, and people who got named in that stuff, it was just gonna be like it never happened. Like I think recently Sia Scala like was doing some stuff on like some indies in the UK, and like came on like under a great deal of fire on social media and stuff like that, and like I think some people were kind of disappointed at some of the wrestlers that were like applauding his in-ring return and stuff like that. But again, I think it goes back to that one thing you said about friendships down. Some people you know, ride with their friends, man, regardless of what they've done or what they've been accused of and stuff like that. So, you know, that's that. So, but yeah, with Virgil, that's another thing I wanted to touch on, because he recently, he went, I think he said some stuff on Twitter recently as far as his, like, well, so firstly on his dementia, like I wish Virgil the best, man. Like he's very, polarizing individual.
Meat sauce. Meat sauce.
Virgil, the man, bro. But I know Ted DiBiase had recently, he did like some interview. He was like, you know, he was gonna try to reach out to Virgil and stuff like that, because he heard like he wasn't doing stuff. Hell eyes. And Virgil like called him out on Twitter. He was like, "Are you trying to get some like clout off my name now? Because people calling you out," because you know Ted DiBiase in the middle of that scandal. Like he like with Brett Favre and his son Ted DiBiase senior, like with the But they was like, they stole money from like a non, but they did something, stole money from like a church or something like that.
It was part of this whole, Mississippi, basically they essentially falsified, fund or, essentially fraud when it comes to, funds that were directed from Mississippi government that are supposed to go to certain entities. You could apply for them. This was during COVID, and, they basically just took advantage of a system and, luckily got caught for it.
Okay. So yeah, I know Virgil had called him out on. He was like, "You trying to get some goodwill off my name or something like that." Virgil was hilarious, man. But like when I'm looking at the other stuff on the list, man. This is when I was really interested to talk to you about the MLW response to WWE's motion to dismiss the antitrust lawsuit. And I'm actually surprised that MLW is like they really want to go this way with WWE. Like, cause I feel like with WWE, like with their lawsuits, man, they, especially with the MLW, that's a way smaller organization than WWE. Like, I feel like WWE, they can easily just turn this into a money thing, like where they just drag it out until it's a competition about who's spending the most money. And I don't think MLW can keep up with them. But y'all, do you think that the MLW got some up their sleeve? Like, and that's the only way that they're not backing down from this thing. Like, I can't see any other reason why. I feel like MLW, like they got some shit. They got some shit in the trunk that they have not let out yet.
Yeah, and I think.
Go ahead, John.
I think they're capitalizing on WWE not wanting this to go to a discovery phase. And discovery phase of a trial is when you know they can obviously get in some records. I'm sure WWE doesn't want that, so. It's a smart move by them. I'd say it's a very strategic, but it just depends. Again, WWE has money for decades and decades and decades. They can bleed them as much as they want, but they're just trying to avoid discovery. Who knows? They may come to a settlement, but it's you know, I don't think anyone is really on MLW's side in this. Like, it's not like they screwed them out of, I think, of a huge deal. It's, you know, they drew, I think it was...
It was Tubi, right?
It was Tubi, and it was also, they blamed them also for losing the Vice deal. And, but the Vice deal, you know, they only drew 40,000 people for, I believe it was Intimidation Games, after a debut of Dark Side of the Ring. And they just didn't keep the audience. So it's kind of one of those things where you can definitely point to... I think WWE has a lot of, you know, ammo and common sense on their side, but it's just a question of whether a court agrees with it. But I wouldn't be surprised to see this get settled, but probably for far less than what MLW is hoping for.
Okay. And with Gargano, you know, him talking about like a big part of him only wants to wrestle to the 40. Josh, would you ever of the mass said that like Gargano like wasn't going to go back to WWE at some point? Like I feel like AEW like was always there, but like or maybe this is just like I don't know, maybe it's just like the hindsight talking, but like I don't know, I feel like WWE would just like the place for Gargano. Like I definitely think he would have found success in AEW, like in ring wise, but I just don't.
Yeah,
I just don't know like where he would have fit in if that would have made sense. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think when Triple H took over, I think that changed everything. I think he probably be in AEW if it wasn't for that, because there was a reason that he didn't sign. And yeah, I mean, hindsight now is 2020, but I think that certainly changed things. But my guess is he would have been he would be already in AEW at this point had it not been for the regime change. But you know, it's I think is a benefit from it. You look at how the dominoes kind of fell. He had every opportunity to sign with them, and I'm not fully sure how much they talked, if they talked directly, that being AEW and Gargano. But it's hope maybe one of those things we'll learn about years later. But it would be another, you know, great worker for them. But they have a company full of great workers, and until they really really commit to somebody, it's hard to say how well his run would have got over. And we'll kind of see how this, I'm interested to see how this next, where we're talking about Gargano and WWE when it comes to like June of next year, because that'll be a good cycle with Triple H in creative and all that. And, you know, I think you see some grumblings about how he's being used now. So, but does he care? I don't know. So I'm interested to see what this next 6 to 8 months is like.
That's a fair assessment. That's a fair assessment. And like just the last two things on going back to the MLW front, like this wasn't listed on the thing, but like it's just like within the conversation about MLW.
Yeah,
dude, I do not understand the thought process of airing an event that took place in July, referring to Battle Ride, and just now putting it on your on their new service with their Pro Wrestling TV that they're on right now.
Yeah.
Dude, half the stuff is outdated. Like, yeah. Dude.
Think of all the people that are in WWE now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. These people are like actively being pushed on like MLW programming now. Like Scarlett. And like, you know what I'm saying? It's stuff like that. And the thing is, even with the National Openweight title, dude, Davey Richards been running around with the belt since July.
They're acting like
he been defending it. Well, he defended it on NWA, defending it in New Japan, on New Japan Strong. And like they acting like, oh, you know, he just took the title from Alice Kane. And like, you know, it's crazy. Alice Kane did an interview, this is not too long ago, and he was like, dude, I just wish they would just like put the show out or put the match out, like, because it's He was like, it's saying like it's getting ridiculous at this point for like him to keep acting like he's the MLW National Overweight Champion. Like,
I know,
like,
for nearly like, half a year. I know.
For nearly half a year, when you got the dude who's the real champion right now, literally on Impact pay-per-view, or you know what I'm saying, or NWA pay-per-views. Like MLW, they have like one of the most interesting business models like I have seen, in like strategies. Like it's real like weird, and like I don't get it, but like maybe it, you know, that works for them. But yeah, MLW, man, they got their ways about, I should say.
Yeah, I think it's because ultimately it doesn't matter, right? I mean, I think that they and you know, it's It's good. It, you know, I'm at this point where it's like, it's great that these different wrestlers are getting work.
Yeah.
You know, as long as promotions are making money, I don't know how, because I don't know. I had never heard of Pro Wrestling TV, honestly, before this deal. But, you know,
they had control your narrative.
Yeah, that's true. That's, yes. It's hard when you keep putting out stuff and saying that you're, you know, that you're talking to these broadcast networks, or you're talking about streaming, you have big deals.
Hey, Josh, that's a cool thing right there.
I know.
I'm telling you, interviews.
But there's only so many times you can do that before people are like, it's just bullshit, right? And yeah. I think they are very similar to, I think the second and third tier promotions in the kind of hierarchy of things have realized that they're an on-demand product now. Now, people watch it whenever, and they'll get to it whenever, and it really doesn't matter when they air stuff. I mean, when I was talking to Scott DeMore earlier this year on this show.
That was a great interview.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Essentially about running Fridays and things like that. Essentially what he was saying was I think he talked about people watch a lot of their stuff on demand. They'll get to it when they get to it. If they don't get to it on Friday because they're watching, you know, other AEW stuff or they're out or whatever, you know, it's fine. And if they can survive that way, that's great. I wonder how many of those promotions can survive that way with MLW, NWA, and Impact. I think Impact is kind of a step above those two promotions, but you know, there's only so much that people can take in. And I thought this year was going to kind of be the financial wrecking for that. I guess we'll see if it's 2023 that at some point there's just people are like, I'm just not going to watch it because I get my itch scratch with wrestling with all these other things that I can jump in on, not to even count, you know, New Japan, GCW, there's only so much people can take in and, you know, Creative Matters and all that. But again, if these promotions are able to make money, how much money are they really making? And with MLW, it's kind of one of those ones. I don't fully get it, but I think they're wisely doing this thing where they do these TV tapings, you know, four times a year or so. They're able to get, you know, 3 months of time, give or take, out of those. And financially, it works for them. You know, whether or not the talent are making enough money that it makes it justifiable, these guys are still working for them. It's not like they're putting out. They have a better roster than the NWA does, right? I mean, they have an interesting talent. They're able. I mean, Court has good relationships. I mean, look, he's able to get Swerve back for a show. Mm-hmm. You know, he's able to. So he gives people opportunities, and I think these second, third tier promotions, the best that they can offer is we'll give you the platform to get noticed by one of the big two and hopefully get signed. Mm. And if not, we're happy to have you here, pay what we can and give you an opportunity to work on TV, being angles, practice, you know, all those type of things. MLW, I don't really know kind of where they fit. But I think it's, you know, I wouldn't be surprised a year from now, they're going back to YouTube or something, you know, fully. Hard to really kind of figure them out.
Yeah. Like I could sort of see something along those lines. Like I don't know exactly like what pro wrestling TV is like what they're providing or what, you know, anything along those lines. Like only thing I never knew about Pro Wrestling TV was that they had Control Your Narrative. And like, once I saw that, I was like, I don't know if that's, I mean, if that's what you're offering, man, hey, it ain't my cup of tea, but do your thing. I ain't hating on
yep.
you. The last thing on this thing that I wanted to say, and this is just like a comment more than anything, but like the X-Pac, when he, you know, he got his torn biceps and he's successfully underwent surgery. Like, I don't recall. I think the X-Pac is going to be in the 2023 Royal Rumble.
Oh.
His Royal Rumble match.
All right.
I think he's going to be in it. And I think that's going to be his return. Because I remember he said that he doesn't want to do any, if he wrestles again, he doesn't want to do any he wasn't referring to GCW, but he just like, he doesn't want to do like any small stuff. Like, it has to be like a big deal. Like, for him to go out there and wrestle again, especially after suffering the injury. So I think that the next thing that he'll do is him being a surprise entrant in the 2023 Men's Royal Rumble match.
I like it. I love that prediction. Mark it down, people. Mark it down. So we're done with April. We are at 2 hours, Andrew. You and I spent 2 hours, and
wow,
seemed like it only took. Seems like it was only like 45 minutes or so, but it was
it's always great talking to you, John.
It is. You and I think went 2 hours last year too. We're double Iron Men or something like that, right?
Yeah, I guess you call it that.
That's right. We'll call it that. Before I let you go, though, I want to give you the chance to plug away where people can read you. Obviously, they can read your words at Post Wrestling, but you know, you're obviously involved in the podcast space and interviews and all that type of stuff. The floor is yours. Where can people read you, feel you, see you, take you in? Again, the floor is yours.
They can follow me on Twitter at @AD___ and the same thing on Instagram. I don't do nothing but post my work on both of those. So like I like, you know, but if you want to hit me on a podcast, hit me like this, I will, you know, like Josh has allowed me to be on his platform. You know, I come and talk your ear off all day long. On my social sites, I just sort of post my work and, you know, sort of just go about my day and stuff like that. But yeah, you can check out my written work over at postwrestling.com along with the other work we doing there. Myself, John Pollock, and also our other writer, Neil Flanagan, who writes with us as well, who's doing a great job. I want to shout out Neil real quick. That's my guy. And you my interviews over at the Andrew Thompson Interviews YouTube channel. I'm just uploading clips right now. I don't have any new interviews, but I'm trying to get back into it. So I'm going to try to line up some stuff, trying to figure out what independent wrestlers I want to go and look at. And I'm going to start trying to get some AEW interviews as well. I'm going to try my hand on that matter. Try to reach out and see what's going on with that. So I'm going to try that. And yeah, that's pretty much it with me, man. And yeah, just, I don't know. Yeah, that's it. I thought I had something else in my brain I wanted to say, but like I went blank, so I was just like, I'm gonna just kick it off. But yeah, that's pretty much all my socials, man. And yeah, always having a good time covering pro wrestling, and this is a great time talking to you, Josh. I really enjoyed the last conversation we had. I think you wanna know what's funny? I actually think we covered November 2021.
Yes. Yeah, we did.
We covered November 2021, and we're recording this next one November 2022, and we're covering April 2022, and it was very, very crazy to like look back at all the stuff that has happened since then, and specifically in the month of April. And yeah, always a great time talking to you, Josh, and it was great meeting you in person, bro. You were a real cool dude, and enjoyed our conversation that we had up in New Jersey. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Likewise. Yeah. And yeah, it's great to see where you've continued to go in the past year or so, and how much people really took to you. And, you know, when they introduced you at the Post Wrestling thing, it was a really good ovation there. So you're doing good work, man. You're doing good work, and people are noticing it. And I'm looking forward to seeing where you are when we talk a year from now. Obviously, you know, talking on this format for the year interview. It'll be fun to see. Andrew Thompson, thanks so much.
Appreciate it, man.
All right. Big thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to all of you for listening. If you've been listening all 200 episodes, or I guess even if you've been listening to, you know, half of that or a quarter of that, whatever. Greatly appreciate that. I was going through, as I label all the podcasts the other day, and noticed, yeah, episode 200. So here we are. No confetti or balloons or anything like that in the office right now. But, you know, it's achievement. And I'll pull back the curtain that there was a point last year that I thought this was probably going to be the last run, and maybe at 200 I was going to be done. And now it really can't be, because I have to finish off the series. But I am going to keep going, because I'm finding that there's an audience for some of the people that I interview, which is good, and different things, and trying to fill different niches, I guess you could say, or just different topics in the world of wrestling and even to an extent MMA that I don't think are being talked about or not really being expounded upon with shows on our website and others as well. I don't know anyone else that does a series quite like this. There's plenty of year-end awards and year-end reviews of best matches and, you know, those type of things. But anything like this? No, there's not. I put a lot of work into it. I'm glad my guests spend time on it as well. So this means a lot to me. So I'm glad that if you guys are listening to this and are willing to spread the word, that helps me out. These shows are all free. And again, I think it's just insightful. I go through over 500 headlines a month, and obviously we don't go deep into every single one, or else these would be lapsed fan level podcasts and so on. But, you know, I'm very proud of these, and proud of what we did last year, and proud of this series as well. Obviously, you're in MMA. That's going to come up as well. So four episodes there. So yeah, this is a busy month and a half of 16 episodes between the two. And yeah, 200 episodes, here we go. And yeah, I'll be sticking around for a little bit longer after that doing doing these shows. And we'll find some other interesting topics as well. So with all that being said, thanks to Andrew Thompson. Thanks to all you for listening. Thanks to everyone for listening for 200 episodes. Let's get to 300, shall we? Until next time, which will be on, I believe, Monday with the episode of May with Jesse Collings, and then June as well next week. And perhaps we'll get in one of these MMA, Q1 MMA. We'll see if we can get that in next week, depending on Paul Fontaine's schedule. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.